Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, pat yourself on the back, Boston. On average, you've got the best educated women of any major city. And on average, women here earn 83 cents to each dollar earned by men. So that's better than the 77 cents to the dollar nationally.
But of course, it's still not one-to-one. So at both the city and state level, significant efforts are underway to close the gender wage gap. And they're all aimed at increasing transparency when it comes to what men and women are paid.
In Boston, Mayor Marty Walsh is gathering salary data from more than 60 companies. The city will break down that data based on gender, race, job category, and length of employment. And the city promises to make the information public this summer. At the state level, legislators are also pushing a new bill that would require employers to post base salaries for open positions and prevent companies from punishing employees who talk about their salaries openly. But will it all work? And how important is greater transparency when it comes to closing the gender wage gap? Well, joining us now to talk about all of this is Victoria Budson. She's executive director of the Women and Public Policy Program at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Welcome back to the program, Victoria.
Thank you, Meghna.
Also with us today from Washington is Christina Hoff Summers. She's resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Great to have you on the program, Christina. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
So we're going to talk about the importance of transparency and some other things when it comes to closing the gender wage gap, specifically here in Boston and Massachusetts. So, Victoria, let me just start with you briefly about the state-level bill that's currently pending on Beacon Hill. Can you just briefly describe to us how it sees transparency as helping closing the gender wage gap?
Well, what's really interesting about closing this gap is most people who experience ramifications of the gap don't know it. Most of the time in life, when something isn't fair, you get a sense of it because you can see it and palpably feel and experience it. But with the wage gap, one is often in a position where one is paid less, but one has no awareness or information about it. Transparency, really shedding light, is the thing that can bring this murky problem into sharp relief. And then the bill tries to give both employees and employers tools to mitigate the problem and to really close those gaps.
Well, let me just jump in here, because it seems as if this bill, though, isn't sort of making transparency mandatory, but rather saying if people talk about it, there will be no ramifications to that.
What it really does is provide employee protection so that an employee cannot be penalized for sharing their wage with a colleague, nor can they be penalized if they talk about someone else's wages that was shared with them, with the exception, as you might expect, of HR employees certainly have a different set of expectations given their role. But this will really ensure that employees in Massachusetts can share with their colleagues information and puts the employer in a position where it's very clear what they can and can't do. And this will give the freedom for an employee to begin that individual process of figuring out, am I paid fairly? Do I understand my compensation? What is valued by my organization? And to have an open dialogue with their employer if they choose to understand why they have the wage that they have and how might they get to a different wage if that's something that's of importance to them.
So the other thing that this bill does, at the state level, is I understand that it does not allow employers to ask potential job applicants what their previous salaries were.
One of the fascinating things about the wage gap is if you think of a snowball rolling downhill, and the more that snowball rolls, the larger it gets, what often happens is women are less likely to negotiate that first job offer. And there's a reason. We know from Hannah Riley Bowles' research at our center at the Women in Public Policy Program that when a woman negotiates that first job offer, she often is considered a less desirable person with whom to work. Women understand intuitively or through the data that they're going to experience social backlash, and they often don't negotiate that. And women are often underpaid in their first job and subsequent jobs. Mm. Now, if you think about what it means to be underpaid for that first job, and if every salary you ever have thereafter is based on the prior salary, you end up with the snowball effect where individuals are paid less because they are underpaid from their last job, then they're underpaid
for the next
job.
Right, so you're sort of permanently
job.
Behind.
Yeah.
Well, let me get Christina Hoff-Summers in here for some reaction to that. First of all, Christina, what's your take on whether or not, you know, state government should even wade into this, the issue of the gender wage gap?
Well, I think they should proceed very carefully and not depend on advocacy groups, activists for their data. Take a hard look at the data. Take a look at the wage gap in Massachusetts and see how much of it can be explained through, you know, innocent causes. Is it because women are in different professions? Do they have different work history? Do they work different hours from men? What's interesting to state legislators should be not just the wage gap as such, but the adjusted wage gap, and then see what's left. Now, typically, when economists, including many very fine feminist economists, look at the wage gap, it narrows to the point of vanishing when you do the proper controls. So that's first of all. I think they may be addressing a problem which has been greatly exaggerated, and the solution may be the cure may be worse than the ailment in this case.
Okay. And so there's a lot to wade into there, and I want to get into it with both of you. But Christine, I do wonder also what's your sort of your take on this idea that we present at the top of the program, which is that for people who believe that a gender wage gap exists legitimately, that transparency is one of the ways to close that gap.
Yes. Well, the fact is, I think if you go back about 80 years to the National Labor Relations Act, it assures employees the right to discuss their salaries in the private sector and public sector. So this has been on the books. So it's really a law that hasn't been enforced, or employers and employees aren't aware of it. So we could, you know, one could have a campaign to make people aware that they have a right to talk about their salaries.
I'm curious about that.
It's another thing to say, though, that the state would require all companies, all places of employment to publish salaries, because then you would find that a lot of employees really don't want that. They would like to keep it private. The research is mixed. There's some research that shows that this just it improves morale, but there's other research that shows it lowers morale, that employees who find out they're earning more, they're a little bit happier, but not by much. But employees that find that they're not earning as much, their morale is very low, and they want to leave. And it doesn't have so much to do with gender. It has to do with the fact that some employees are valued more.
Right. Listeners, we're talking about the gender wage gap in Boston, in Massachusetts, and efforts at the state and local level to close that gap through new projects and legislation, some of which specifically has to do with the idea of introducing more transparency when it comes to talking about how much men and women earn. So we're curious to hear from you. Have you ever been in a situation where greater transparency has revealed a gender wage gap? What did you do about it? What are your ideas on how to bring parity between men and women when it comes to how much they earn for doing the same job? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook or on Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Victoria Budson, let me come back to you here. There's a lot that Christina said there, and so let's start taking a look at it. First of all, she just finds it, she has concerns about the state even being involved at all when it comes to trying to deal with a perceived gender wage gap.
You know, what is really important is that the information is always driven from data. And as you would expect at Harvard, we're very focused on making sure that it's good data with good controls, and randomized control trial testing is the best when that's an option. And what we know is that even when one controls for a college major, career track and choice, time off for children, number of hours worked, that the wage gap, when one looks at it nationally, goes from about 77 cents to 91 cents. So you still have about almost 10% that isn't accounted for by choice. We, of course, could also have a discussion about where those choices come from and what they look like. But what's really significant is that it's not just a gender gap, it's gaps. Hispanic and Latina women are making 54 cents on the dollar compared to the white male dollar. Native Americans are making 59 cents. African-American women are making 64 cents. And for your listeners, literally think about where you sit in your home and pay your bills. And imagine what it would mean, the difference if you're a woman think about what would it mean if you had anywhere between another 27 cents and 9 cents per dollar, and what it would mean if you had 54 cents on
that dollar. I take your point
on
this, but I also noticed that Christina said that, you know, what if you looked at within certain professions. Like, I'm looking at data here from the Women's Workforce Council, right, which is a local effort, from a report they called Boston Closing the Wage Gap. And they themselves find that, say, in the computer and math field, that on average, even though women only form 22.8% of the workforce in those occupations, they're actually earning more than men, $1.07 to every dollar at the median wages that a man earns. So, I mean, Christine was making the point earlier about, you know, just choose the higher paying or the more equal paying professions, ladies.
Well, career track is incredibly important, and you'll note mathematicians are always the best in making sure that they're paid fairly and they're very math-based. So we always like to call that one out. It's just terrific. What is critical, and some of the state-level programs that had taken place under Deval Patrick, the Successful Women, Successful Families, Successful Economies Task Force, really looked at putting into place programs so that high school students across the state, male and female, would really know and understand what type of choices are going to lead to careers that are more likely to have equal pay. It is clear that the STEM fields are absolutely the future in many ways for what will drive our economy and effectiveness. And so there's always going to be the importance of making sure that when people are making these choices, they understand the ramifications of them.
Well, let me turn back to Christina Hoff-Summers here, because I want to take a step back and kind of ask a big think question here, Christina, because I know that a lot of people have very frequently pointed to the fact that when, you know, that wages should operate along, you know, market forces, right? And that the market should take care of inequities when those inequities rise to the surface. But I wonder, though, that works in cases where there is perfect information. And shouldn't a city, shouldn't a state create a situation, whether it's by legislation or not, to encourage employers towards perfect information, and transparency is the way to get there?
Yes, I'm not absolutely against the idea of transparency. I'm only warning that about the law of unintended consequences and just creating a lot of bitterness, because almost everyone will be, not everyone, but many people will be resentful. No one thinks they're paid what they deserve, and they don't understand why the next person is rated better than they are. So it's good to just introduce a new level of acrimony in the workplace.
But
maybe
if they become resentful and then maybe they don't want to work there anymore and go find another job someplace else, that's the market at work too, is it not?
Yeah, and that's what they do. That's one study found that when all the wages were disclosed in public sector in California, there was wage compression. They lowered the wages of managers. And then there was a very high rate of quitting your job and looking somewhere else. So I'm afraid what Massachusetts might do, if you bring in this complicating legislation, just make it all the more harder to do business in Massachusetts, it's not going to help women, it's not going to help men, it's not going to help anyone. It's going to help some other state. And I will add another thing to talk about the problem in a more general way. Right now, we have a crisis in male education. And young men, unlike young women, are not taking as much advantage of education after high school. Young women are more likely to get it. Young men are not. These young men who do not get education after high school are paying a price that is so high, so devastating, and they're going to find it very hard to form families and to have any kind of you almost can't make it into the middle class.
Well, I'm going to just jump
without an education. And
I'm sorry to jump in here, Christina. Okay. Forgive me, but we actually have some callers who want to join us, I end up dominating the conversation so much I don't get enough of them in here. So let's let them have their say. Kirsten is calling from Gloucester. You're on the air, Kirsten.
Hello, thank you so much for taking my call. I got my MBA at Simmons, which is all women, and we had a communication strategy class where we learned that a woman will have 9 of 10 requirements for a job, and she'll think she's not qualified, so she won't even try to get the job, whereas a man will have 3 of the 10, and he'll go in and just fake it till he makes it and get the job. And likewise, I had a job where I was very underpaid, and at the next job I applied for, I had learned to negotiate better, so I got $60,000 more a year. I was not any different of a person. I had just learned how to negotiate better. So I do think it is a good idea to not ask what someone's previous salary was and to be cognizant of the difference between men and women. And on the other hand, I don't think that having everyone know what everyone else's salary is a good idea, because people judge other people based on what they earn, and it could cause a lot. I do think it could cause a huge morale problem. So I can kind of see each side of that issue.
Right. Kirsten, thank you so much for your call. And Victoria Budson, I want to get your response here, because this is the second time now we've heard people expressing concerns about the morale problems, which is a big deal if everyone's sort of looking askance at everyone else all of a sudden in a workplace.
Well, you know, what's terrific is there isn't any bill which is suggesting that all salaries would be published in any way. I haven't seen any bill to that effect. So if there is one, that's not something that is taking place here in Massachusetts. So all this does is create the opportunity to ensure that an employee won't be penalized if they choose to say what it is. And most employees want to understand what it would take for them to get from the salary they are now to the salary that they want. And transparency lets people know how well they're being valued in an organization so they can get those stepping stones to where they want to be. Kirsten also talked about something very important, which is negotiation training. And in the federal bill, the Paycheck Fairness Act, had that passed, it would have also put into place negotiation training. What we know is that when women make that ask in a way that communicates being relational, this is an active step that any person can do, they don't end up with as much backlash. It mitigates the effect. If I were asking Meghna for a raise, if I said, Meghna, I really enjoy working here and thank you for the opportunity, I'm looking forward to the opportunity to being on your team, I think that my salary would command in the marketplace 10% more based on data from my region. Then, by using an external source and by saying something relational, that backlash effect is really diminished.
Christina Hoff-Summers, I mean, do you think that's a way to go, to just really just focus on women in terms of how they sell themselves in the workplace and negotiate?
Well, I'm going to agree to this extent, and I'd very much agree with the caller. I think she struck a very reasonable compromise, is that let's not start passing laws and be too meddlesome in the workplace. But yes, I think that we should do all we can to show sort of ambitious, talented women how to succeed. And this is why I find it so counterproductive to constantly be telling them about this, that the workplace is rigged against them. It's really not. If they want to earn a large salary, I can tell them right now they should be careful about their college major. Better to do petroleum engineering than to do, you know, English literature. If you want to earn a lot, it's better to not take time out of the workplace. If you do those things,
can I just jump in there though? When you say take time, what do you mean? Why it's better to not take time out of
the workplace? When women have children, they have a much more tenuous relationship with the workplace. They're far more likely to work part-time or to drop out for several years.
So what are they
years.
Supposed to do? Not have children?
Well, they're supposed to have children, but then who's going to solve that problem? Is it the employer's responsibility? Is it society's responsibility? Should we repeal the laws of nature and make women less attached to children? It's simply the way we are, that women are tend to want to be the primary caretakers of children. Now,
I would say, forgive me for jumping in here, but this is such an important part of this conversation, because I think there have been ample number of studies show that what you're saying is exactly true, that because women do take time out of their career paths at a particularly important part of their career paths, it does set for you know, having children and childcare, it sets them back when it comes to wages in the long run. But I guess what I'm struggling with is, why is the answer to that is that's just how things are? I mean,
well,
aren't there
a number of
solutions to that?
They've tried. Look at Scandinavia. Look at Sweden. Look at Norway. Look at Holland. They have tried to have all the policies beyond the wildest dreams of some of our women's groups here, and it hasn't closed the gap. In fact, what it's done is, far more women are out of the workplace or working part-time. Far more American women are moving ahead in as managers. Far more women are in high positions in corporations. So now Europe has these, they have they're requiring that they have 40% of their board members be women, and they have to bring American women. So before we rush in to solve that problem, and all the solutions are, you know, more government programs to help women stay home with children, those government programs to help women stay home with children, they might be very good for families, but they're not good for women's careers.
Well, when we talk about what's good for companies, what we know is that the talent force in the United States and also in Europe within the next several years within South America is predominantly female. The majority of individuals to get high school, associates, college, and postgraduate degrees is all female. In order for businesses to effectively compete, whether we're looking regionally here in Boston, whether we're looking at the state level in Massachusetts, or whether we're looking nationally, will fundamentally depend on the ability of companies to hire, promote, and retain women. Christina earlier mentioned how we see men and boys who are now less educated than their female counterparts, and that's correct. If companies want to effectively compete, they're going to have policies in place to retain the best female talent. It's going to be critical to look not just at the regulatory effects, but also to look at what we call gender nudges. You want to create effective systems such as hiring in bundles rather than just hiring one-offs. We know that women are consistently hired based on past performance and men can be hired on potential. We need to ensure and teach and train all of our hiring officers to effectively assess talent so you don't miss the best talent in the pool.
Okay, well, running out of time here, but I wanted you mentioned the word nudge, and I wanted to ask one last question of both of you in terms of how leadership, both in the political realm and the actual business realm, might make a big difference here without any legislation at all. Because we mentioned at the very beginning of this segment that Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is gathering anonymous data from 60 companies around the Boston area about how they pay. But he also looked at his own cabinet, right? And he found out the city has released information that said women in Walsh's cabinet will be paid almost $27,000 less than men on average. And this is even after Walsh increased the pay for two highly placed women in his cabinet. In the same story, I noticed that a local Boston business person said, if he, Mayor Walsh, can do it, maybe other people will look at their own companies and find out how they're paying men versus women. So just that example that's being set by Mayor Marty Walsh, how powerful is that when it comes to making significant change? Christina Hoff Summers.
You know, I think it's a good thing to talk about it, make employers aware of it in case there's someone that's still in the dark ages and doesn't realize how harmful it will be to the company, to morale, to everyone, to underpay women, not to recruit talented women. That's devastating for a business. But at the same time, I feel like there are all these women's groups and all these reports, and they have talking points and gender nudges. And we're missing the big picture, which is the undereducation of young men and boys. So the thing is, right now, women's groups are everywhere. And we have this vast network of groups arguing for women's rights, which is fine, but there's nothing like that on the other side. And so men's issues, they get no attention. I think the discussion we're having today is a perfect example. If we are told that businesses are going to be in crisis because they have to hire... There are not that many men that are going to be sufficiently educated. Isn't that an alarm that we should be doing something about boys' education?
Well, I think the alarm would be for both boys' education and for encouraging women who are in
both,
the workplace.
Exactly.
Victoria
both.
Budson.
We should be doing both.
Well, what's really critical is we know that there is a modeling effect. And if you look across Massachusetts, there's been 114 companies, many of them the largest companies within the state, who have voluntarily signed on to work on closing the wage gap. Companies understand that this is a really important and critical tool for them to be most efficient in the marketplace. And what's terrific is we now have an extremely large amount of data on what makes those gaps close and how to do it. And we work closely with businesses to ensure that that can happen, and good for the mayor to wanting to ensure that the Boston economy is a strong one.
Well, Victoria Budson is Executive Director of the Women in Public Policy Program at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Thanks for joining us today, Victoria.
Thank you very much.
And Christina Hoff Summers, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, joining us today from Washington. Pleasure to speak with you, Christina. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
And listeners, let us know what you think about this topic. Do you think transparency does have an effect on shrinking the gender wage gap? Let us know at radioboston.org or send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Stay with us, because when we come back, you may be when you eat as much as what you eat, according to a new study. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.